As the White House threatens to take over state elections, restrict abortion nationwide, and take away our health care, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is the last line of defense for our rights. That's why the Supreme Court election on April 7th is so critical. The ACLU does not endorse or oppose candidates, but wants you to make an informed decision. When it comes to abortion rights, Maria Lazar supported overturning Roe v. Wade and is endorsed by groups that want to ban abortion. Chris Taylor voted against abortion bans and defended abortion rights while working with Planned Parenthood. And on the issue of voting rights in Wisconsin, Maria Lazar defended efforts to rig elections for one political party through extreme gerrymandering of congressional and legislative districts. Chris Taylor opposes rigging the system with extreme partisan gerrymandering. On April 7th, stand up for our rights. Paid for by American Civil Liberties Union, Incorporated.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see.
Hello, it's Earl Ingram, and what's going on with Earl Ingram? My guest is the one and only Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, and we've got a lot to talk about, a lot to cover this morning. Again, Dr. Robert Craig is the Executive Director of Citizen Action. You know, he's also a political scientist, and if I took the time to have Dr. Craig tell you about all his credentials and all the different shows he's on across the nation, we would run out of time. So it's good morning, Dr. Craig, and welcome back.
Always great to be with you, Earl, and glad you have a great new sponsor. Seems like free speech and Earl Ingram go together.
Well, I'm excited about that, Dr. Craig, but more than anything else, I'm ready to get right at it. So much to talk about in such a little time frame to do it. But I want to talk about, Dr. Craig, what is the SAVE Act? With all the other things that are going on, Dr. Craig, with the war and those kind of things, they're slipping this SAVE Act through. What do you know about the SAVE Act that we should know and be aware of?
I would define it as the Save Trump Act, certainly, or by Undermining Democracy Act. And by the way, Senator from Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, wants to eliminate the filibuster in order to pass it. Now, I think the filibuster is a relic of Jim Crow and slavery and ought to go, but it's interesting the Senator's choices as to why it should be, when it should be removed. But because that's why it's going to have trouble passing. If it requires 60 votes, it won't happen. And because it may get enough to pass with Vice President Vance in a normal, 50-50, 51 votes wins, but not with this filibuster rule. But it creates this crazy quilt series of barriers to disenfranchise a ton of voters. I mean, this is the Jim Crow voting restrictions on steroids, Earl, in a lot of ways. You're going to have to, in order to register to vote, you're going to have to prove you're a citizen, which means you have to produce a birth certificate or a passport. And you'll have to produce it in person somewhere. Not everyone's going to be able easily to do that. In fact, it's a poll tax because it costs money to get these things if you don't have them handy. And so there's that. There's universal photo ID. We already have that in Wisconsin, but that is a disenfranchising strategy as well. And then it has you, these are just some of the provisions. It requires all the state voting rolls to be handed over to the Trump regime and run through computers at the Department of Homeland Security. And if their faulty computer, which has a lot of bad data, determines you're not a citizen, then it throws you off the voting rolls with no process whatsoever. You won't even necessarily know about it until you go to vote. So there's that whole thing. And President Trump is demanding now that mail voting be banned, that he wants that to be added to it. And he wants to throw in some provisions attacking trans kids again, you know, who are the biggest problem in our society, if you believe his side or one of them. So it's because he's terrified of losing the House, at least, maybe the Senate. And he thinks fewer people voting and creating all these barriers is to his benefit. And this is easier than trying to declare martial law and seize the ballot boxes, or what he tried to do when he tried to overturn the elections in 2020. So this is his legislative attempt to do so. It's just part and parcel of a regime that hates democracy and wants to move into some kind of dictatorship with some of the appearances and trappings of democracy, like elections that don't actually matter.
You know, Dr. Craig, as I was reading about the SAVE Act, I wonder where they got the title, the SAVE Act, and what's the purpose of that. But after going through what we are talking about here, you know, we talked about possibly this being an authoritarian presidency. That's exactly what it is. There's no hiding it anymore. There's no way you can say possibly. We're in it, right?
Yeah, one of the main arguments that scholars made that we weren't was that Trump wasn't imperialist going and invading a whole lot of other countries and being the dictator on a world stage. Well, in his second term, he certainly now checked that box as well and is operating with the largest, most powerful military in the history of humanity with impunity to do what he wants. Not only what he has unleashed in Iran, where he has no idea how to get out, no idea apparently, because it's also an incompetent administration, what the consequences would be, what Iran's leverage was closing the Straits of Hormuz, which I knew since I was an undergraduate political science international relations major. But, you know, he has people like Pete Hegseth advising him. And now he's deciding he's going to take over Cuba and decide what to do with it, we heard. I mean, every day there's something else, and listening to his ramblings, you're going to lose brain cells, except they're dangerous ramblings. And they're dangerous ramblings that are costing lives. And the whole thing about declaring war, doing it secretly with Netanyahu, and then demanding the Europeans who were not consulted and involved, that they now send warships in harm's way to try to clear the Straits of Hormuz, it's not workable, as they are saying. So now he's all mad at the allies again, taking after them. Meanwhile, Putin is giving Iran targeting information that is putting American service people in harm's way. No issue for Trump. He's fine with Putin.
You know, Dr. Craig, you're an international special relations expert. So these are things that you understand, or possibly understand, but those of us who don't have that background, we can't even begin to believe where we are and what's taking place here. Let me ask you if you could look into your crystal ball and say, Donald Trump, the Republicans lose the House and the Senate. How long do you think a guy like Donald Trump is going to hang around? I don't see him hanging around 2 years where he's just totally checkmated. I mean, could you see him walking away at any point in time?
I don't know.
His pockets will be full. He'll have the money that he's certainly siphoned.
The right-wing Supreme Court, PAC Supreme Court, has declared him immune from prosecution as long as he is president, and the Democrats are unlikely to have the kind of majority that could convict him in impeachment. He is mostly operated through executive power, and it's the courts, when they get around to it, it takes forever. The highest court is inconsistent in even holding him accountable. So I think he'll hold on to the office and try to operate without Congress, and there'll be a series of lawless actions like we've already had with Venezuela, Iran, may or may not happen with Cuba, et cetera. So I think, and what's happened with ICE? I mean, you know, did you see it? Just, you can't even keep up with all the extra legal activity. Remember, he got rid of the Voice of America,
right?
Our international broadcast arm. Well, a court just reinstated all the employees at Voice of America. There are 1,200. I don't know, Earl, it's been like a year. You think anyone ready to come back? But the judge, you know, so it takes that long to get to a district court judge that's willing to say you have no legal right to do this. But then I don't even know how effective that's going to be and what's going to happen when it gets to Justice Thomas and Justice Alito.
You know, Dr. Craig, if I could take a second to write, make a list of all the things that he's done. You remember the Yellow Pages we used to have a long time ago? We need something as thick as the Yellow Pages. Because if you think about just the fact that he's now concerned about having to pay back all the people that he stole the money from with these tariffs. And now he's concerned that he's going to have to pay back half of that, at least $500 billion are going to have to be paid back. And we're already headed towards a very difficult future. If all these things, Dr. Craig, happen, they're happening all at once, it's just such a bad omen for the future of our nation. I don't know how we get out of this. You know, you can't get out of it in a year or two, Dr. Craig. It might take decades or more to get out of the stuff that he's gotten us into.
Yeah, between him and how he's remade the Republican Party from an arch-conservative party into a quasi-fascist party, just in terms of political science definitions, I know the word fascism is loaded and people get upset about it. It has a definition. You can look it up. He meets the definition, at least, of being proto-fascist. There would be some disagreement as to whether you have to actually open the concentration camps in order to be actually fascist or not. That, in fact, you, according to most definitions, you don't. And in fact, we have internment camps. They're called the massive warehouse detention centers that he's trying to create. So if he was just gone and you had a Republican Party committed to democracy, maybe you could fix it faster, but his people aren't going anywhere either. And the only silver lining here, look, because of his incompetence and his willingness to lie and not even take anything he promises people seriously, that's an opportunity to rebuild democracy, because ultimately when it doesn't work, it's more vulnerable. I mean, some authoritarians are smarter, and like Viktor Orban, and actually do provide benefits to their populations and are popular, which is a much harder problem for pro-democracy advocates and anyone trying to resist. And so when he runs on the cost of living, and then he has no intention of doing it, he does things like tariffs. He does things like, let's just declare war on Iran and have the completely predictable thing happen. They close the Straits of Hormuz and it strikes up oil prices because it's a commodity. It doesn't matter how much oil we have here. If there's a lower world supply, the price goes up. And the big oil companies are giving us a discount because there's more of it here. They're going to sell what the market will bear, and the market will bear much more when there's a lower supply. When you cut off the oil from Saudi Arabia and the other big oil producers, and Iran for that matter. And so that's the vulnerability. Of course, that means the Democrats have to get their act together and actually not only run on affordability, which is a problem that's been developing for decades because of the expropriation of wealth by the wealthiest Americans, large corporations, where prices are very high because of massive monopolies and wages are much lower than they ought to be. That's the pincher movement. Democrats actually have to actually deliver on that ultimately to rebuild faith that democracy and democratic values is the best way to achieve better lives, to achieve people's aspirations for themselves, their communities, their families. Right now, they're not so sure. That's why we could have a Trump. But very dangerous situation, Earl. And part of the danger is partisans, and most people vote their identity, vote who they think their group is, and they actually adjust their issues to accommodate what they think their group's issues are, not the other way around. There's this, you listen to cable news, you listen to PBS and National Public Radio, and they go to all these person on the street interviews. They act like people are processing things based on issues and might leave, you know, Trump, you know, because they decided I wanted this and then he did that. I was against, you know, wars and expansionism. There is a small group that will do that, but most people simply accommodate their views, which means having a Trump this long, Earl, has converted the Republican base voter into someone who actually adopts all these positions. It's very scary. He has created a totalitarian electorate by simply making that the mark of the group.
You know, Dr. Craig, we've got to take a short break to acknowledge our great sponsor, the ACLU, and, you know, no better sponsor for Dr. Craig and Citizen Action on what's going on with Earl Ingram than the ACLU. Hang on a second. We'll be right back.
As the White House threatens to take over state elections, restrict abortion nationwide, and take away our health care, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is the last line of defense for our rights. That's why the Supreme Court election on April 7th is so critical. The ACLU does not endorse or oppose candidates, but wants you to make an informed decision. When it comes to abortion rights, Maria Lazar supported overturning Roe v. Wade and is endorsed by groups that want to ban abortion. Chris Taylor voted against abortion bans and defended abortion rights while working with Planned Parenthood. And on the issue of voting rights in Wisconsin, Maria Lazar defended efforts to rig elections for one political party through extreme gerrymandering of congressional and legislative districts. Chris Taylor opposes rigging the system with extreme partisan gerrymandering. On April 7th, stand up for our rights. Paid for by American Civil Liberties Union, Incorporated.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see.
All right, welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram, sponsored by the ACLU, and my esteemed guest and good friend, international public relations specialist, executive director of Citizen Action, and a whole lot of other things, Dr. Robert Craig. Dr. Craig, you sit there and you watch all these people sitting around him kissing his ring. It's bad enough to just have one guy, but none of them have the courage to say to him, Dr. Craig, hey, President, do you have any idea the magnitude of condemning and vilifying all of the NATO allies that 75 years ago made it possible for us to defeat, Germany, and these people have all understood the importance of our nation, and they've basically agreed that it's okay for America to be, the lead, and they basically acquiesce to us. And now all of a sudden one guy comes in and says, we don't need them anymore. Dr. Craig, with all of your education in these areas, did you ever think you would hear a president of the United States tell the NATO that we don't need you anymore, and then turn around, Dr. Craig, and not even understand the fact that he's been really condemning NATO ever since he's been the president, and now turn around and ask them to endanger their troops and their people in this folly that he's created? I mean, clearly there's something that's not right with him, Dr. Craig, and the people around him. That's what's so frightening. Nobody has the courage around him to tell him.
Yeah, there's a tendency of dictators to like other dictators and not like democracies. You're seeing that there. His cabinet meetings are something else. In fact, there ought to be more done with them for more of the public to actually see them, because it's not usual that it's on tape to see these lickspittles drooling all over themselves to praise the dictator. And I mean, it's bizarre. They like start off talking about him like it's World Wrestling Federation. Oh, the greatest, most powerful man and genius that has ever lived, and is such a honor to be in your room. You're able to carry your suit jacket. Get you a call. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, they're all but on their knees. They're verbally on their knees, right? Yes. But, back in the days of kings, if you got an actual audience with King George III, people forget that's who we rebelled against. There was this elaborate ritual where you had to, come in and you had to do, to to bow down multiple different times in different ways and then not stare him in the eye and all. This is the verbal equivalent of that. I'm not totally surprised. First of all, people should understand that part of human nature. How many people who have climbed their way to the top have done it by that kind of behavior? And we should not respect those people or want them in charge of anything important, right? Those are not people of character. It's not the way we try to raise young people, right? You've done a lot of advising of young people, or you try to build character and show people that by being virtuous and having character, you know, you will succeed and get some portion of the American dream, right? And this sends all the other messages, right? This is like, find someone powerful and kiss up to them and just be a brown noser of the most vile variety. But you asked if I'm surprised. See, I'm kind of a geek this way, Earl. I've been reading right-wing literature in this country since I was a high school debater and throughout. And these sort of ideas have been there all along. They've been full of crazy stuff in all the literature that was around the kind of group that led to Newt Gingrich.
Right.
And so on, all of these characters. The stuff's wild if you read it and crazy. And now it's all online. Anyone who wants to go and see and follow any of these influencers, you'll see this is like crazy stuff. And so this just, what's bizarre is it, I guess there was always the potential it would seize power. And you know what political scientists say about this? They say our mandated two-party system made us more vulnerable to this. Because in a multi-party system, like they have in many European democracies, the authoritarian party can't really get over 25% or so, and therefore it can't actually get control of a government. Because there are other moderate conservative or traditional conservative parties that believe in democracy, and they split up the conservative vote. If you have a mandate two-party system, and the authoritarians get hold of that party, others will just follow based on partisanship, which is the most powerful factor in how people vote if they're committed partisan, which most people are actually. And so this is the one way you consolidate power and get power of a whole government is if you have only mandated two parties. So it's a real weakness of our system. It's always been possible, but it's obviously, I don't know. I guess, Earl, I'll say this. You know, the old line from the 1930s, 40s, it could never happen here.
Yes.
Not true. We're as vulnerable as any of the other countries that have descended into authoritarianism to this. It's human nature. It's not, there's that American is not exceptional in that way, unfortunately.
You know, Dr. Craig, we talk about, and you talk about the Democrats getting their act together. And then you, on the other hand, you always hear people say, well, the Democrats have a big tent. We have a big tent. Is the fact that we have a big tent, I mean, when I listen to people like the senator in Pittsburgh, what is the guy's name?
Do you mean Fetterman?
Fetterman. And so when we're talking about a big tent and you listen to a guy like that, and then you realize, Dr. Craig, that I'm hearing people say, well, Democrats, really people, they aren't really leftist Democrats. They don't want to be associated with being leftist. And I'm like, wait a minute. Leftist, if leftist means equality, Dr. Craig, and not discriminating and treating people fairly and understanding that our society as it's structured is not fair and balanced and giving each and every American citizen equal opportunity at things. Why is that a bad thing? Why is it that being a leftist, someone who thinks that every human being has a right to be whatever they want to be, and it doesn't bother me, it's not my issue. Why is it that even some Democrats think, well, he's too far to the left? Well, what do you want, right? If left means counterbalance to the right, why are we so afraid to say, well, we're on the side of what's right, what's fair, and what's just, Dr. Craig. I don't understand that with Democrats.
Well, it's a canard, Earl, and it's the language of pundits, political consultants, some professors. It's not the way average people think.
Okay.
Average people think about, I have a right to health care. Most people think there's a right to health care. Yes. And you know what? They don't care that much about the policy details. But remember, when we passed Medicare and Medicaid, Ronald Reagan, working for General Electric, did ads saying it would be the end of all freedom. It was the inevitable slide to totalitarianism was having Medicare. It's absurd. So if you think Social Security and Medicare are socialist and they should be repealed, well, have the guts to say that, because now that people have them, they want them to be improved. And in fact, they want them to be better than they are because they don't cover enough and they're underfunded. It's not enough of an old age pension, Social Security. Medicare has too many holes in it, and it's been partially privatized, which is a huge problem. But I will say this, because sometimes, you know, the further left can sometimes be, can say it must be Medicare for all. It must be a single payer system. That is a very good system in Canada. There are other European countries that have other systems that include private insurance. But the major thing is that we have democratic control that sets the price and makes sure everyone has it, right? So I think that I don't think it's necessarily a left-right problem. It is the kind of Democrat that actually doesn't want to do anything and doesn't think it's possible. Their liberalism has been so watered down that they have a limited view of what is even possible in the system. Therefore, they don't solve problems. Like, you can't just go on and on with our public education system being underfunded, with it being highly unequal, where the poorest kids and the kids of color get the least spent on them, right? We can debate the best approach, but it has to be an approach that will actually solve the problem. And that's where I think the real division is. Those who think that the system can't produce anything, which is a way to create Trump, okay? That kind of defeatism is a way to create Trump. I mean, liberalism used to have this kind of vision that we had, that transformational vision that we have to create radical equality, and that's the goal, and we have to actually accomplish it. It's like become this defensive thing with some of these Democrats, where they said they'll sigh in their offices in Congress or in the legislature, the governor. I'd love, that would be great, but it's beyond my control. Nothing is possible. This governor, Governor Evers, will tell you that. Ask him why anything hasn't happened, and he'll tell you it's beyond his control. It isn't possible. That is killing democracy.
Dr. Craig, I'm just saying that doesn't there have to be some counterbalance to right-wing ideology? I mean, they don't say, well, we shouldn't consider this, and because it's not good for the average American, we're just going to plow through and we're going to do what's in the best interest of the wealthy in this nation. And so we don't care about what anybody else says or does. There has to be some counterbalance to that way of thinking in order for there to be any balance whatsoever. But if the Democrats are willing to take that on, Dr. Craig, I don't know how we can, you know, even get back to even.
I mean, I'll give you an example, right? The Affordable Care Act, President Obama, right? That is a moderate policy. It uses private insurance, okay? As originally done, it wasn't affordable enough for people.
Right.
But it was a huge improvement because it was somewhere to go. Biden improved it, enhanced the subsidies, where it was better, made a lot better. But here was the problem with it still. That makes it ungodly expensive because it didn't deal with the costs, the gigantic prices of big pharma, hospitals, insurance, which is why we pay double any other country and people still can't afford their health care. Right. It's not universal. Right. So you can make that choice, but you better be willing to raise the money to make it affordable, which means paying massive amounts of money to monopolies that are overcharging. So I'm saying that I think for the people, they would accept that if you actually did make it affordable for people. That has to be the measure. And that hasn't worked out as well as reforming the whole system. So that debate can go on about which policies it is, and you have to understand the pluses and minuses. You'll have to raise taxes on the rich if you want to do it the Affordable Care Act way, okay? Which would be a good idea because they have Excounded with most of the benefits of growth for the last 50 years. They've rigged the economy, and left and right, MAGA voters and progressive and liberal voters think the economy is rigged against them. That's one thing they agree on. And so I think if either moderates are going to come up with solutions that actually move the ball and help people and be able to actually implement them and hold on to them, or the Zohran Mamdani, Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez approach is going to take over. You saw in the Illinois Senate race, the most progressive candidate won, Julia Stratton, despite massive spending and weird dark money stuff coming from AIPAC, from crypto. There were some congressional races in Illinois that happened this week where the progressive either won or lost, and some of it had to do with interference with massive dark money by crypto and by AIPAC. That's another thing. We're going to need to rein in the dark money problem, which is getting so. One of the things that's going really wrong, Earl, is these groups like AIPAC, they don't actually run they don't run ads on their issue. They don't run ads on, we need to support Israel no matter what, right? For AIPAC. They run ads on whatever they think will harm the candidate. So they're proving that they know their issue isn't popular anymore, but they're going to use their money to try to tip the balance and get people in who will do their bidding. I mean, that is very toxic to democracy as well. So if the Democrats can get control, we need to do very sweeping campaign finance reform that puts people in charge and doesn't allow these secretive groups to go and swing elections for their own nefarious purposes.
Hey, Dr. Kriggs, Democrats are taking advantage of that secret money as well. And so, you know, let me say this, Dr. Craig. You mentioned health care, and that's what we had been talking about for, I don't know how many years, that this wasn't going to be a problem. As long as I've known you, Citizen Action created their own kind of health exchange and certainly were working towards this issue. And it's been going on a long time, Dr. Craig. And do you know, nobody's talking about it right now, because even though people are struggling with that, all these other things have surpassed the health care issue. The health care issue is still there. It's still wreaking havoc, and it's been pushed off of the front page, and the silence of it, Dr. Craig, is what I think with all these other things that are going on. Your thoughts, you know, on how we get back to that. Where does that measure up with a war like the one that's going on right now? The Jeffrey Epstein files that are now, nobody's talking about that. These things are being done intentionally, Dr. Craig. I don't care what people say. They're being done intentionally, and the news media and everybody else is falling prey to it.
I think the Epstein files will be back. I think that obviously all the attention now is on Iran. This president is, if he's bringing anything, it's getting our attention, right? Getting everyone's attention. Yeah. Yeah, because there'll be a new sensational thing. He should have been just creating reality TV shows and making lots of money, because surprise after surprise after surprise, though we shouldn't be surprised. But I'll give you good news on healthcare. I think that there's not going to be movement on healthcare issue until after 2028. Wow. If the Democrats elected to commit on it, except at the state level. But what happens at the state level is going to set that up. It'll define what happens with presidential candidates in the Democratic primary and candidates for Congress and U.S. Senate. And so in Wisconsin, I mean, this is what our organization does with our members across the state. People can feel free to join with us, as we're pushing the candidates for governor and legislature to take real positions on healthcare. And we've developed a major agenda at the legislature that would actually make healthcare much more affordable. The Marquette law poll, the most recent one about 2 weeks back, found that healthcare costs was the second biggest issue for the public after the cost of living. Now, the problem with that statistic is healthcare is one of the biggest causes of the cost of living thing. So you're actually asking the question twice. But fascinatingly, if you take the treasured independent voters that both parties try to win elections, right, the swing voters, if you look at them as a cross-section, their top issue is healthcare costs. Cost of living is second, which is amazing. It tells you healthcare is such a big cost of living issue. It trumps the other cost of living issues. So this election can be about healthcare. We could elect a governor and a legislature that would start to take real action. And then that could set up even broader action at the federal level, because almost every era of reform has started with state action. That's why Wisconsin played such a big role during our progressive period of our state in doing things at the state level that became Social Security, became Medicare, became workers' comp, and a lot of other things, and union rights, for example. And so Wisconsin, because it's a battleground state, can play that role again if enough people get involved and not only push candidates to run in healthcare, elect a governor and a legislature that will take meaningful action on it.
You know, Dr. Craig, we've got to leave it there for now. But listen, I'll say, you know, the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast being sponsored by the ACLU and Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, those three things together, I think, really are just a godsend, Dr. Craig, to have Citizen Action and ACLU married in this podcast is more than, I guess, anyone could ask. So I'm so thankful that we're going to be doing this, and I can't wait till the next time.
So it's great to talk to you, and we can talk another time about the attack on free speech, the threat to remove broadcast licenses by Trump and his FCC chairman from because of the inaccurate war coverage. In other words, the coverage of there being no plan and there being no strategy, and Trump gotten us into a quagmire. So there's a big attack on free speech we can talk about another episode, but always great to be with you, Earl.
We will do that next time, I promise you. Thank you very much, my friend. We'll see you the next time.
Talk to me, so you can see, what's going on.
That's a wrap for What's Going On with Earl Ingram, sponsored by the ACLU. See you next time.